Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q.
Hello, Jill. How are you doing?
I am awesome. How are you?
I am so good. I'm wondering if you're feeling a little bit the way I did by the time we were done with the four episodes on me. Are you kind of tired of talking about yourself?
Well, yes and no, because see, I have the added benefit of your perspective on my story, whereas I don't know that I can offer much besides corny jokes and cheese on your story. So it's actually been really cool to me to be able to go through and relive my story, my memoir, but then to see it through your eyes has been really cool as well. So let's keep talking. I think we should keep doing this.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of things that we have talked about over the past couple of episodes that I cannot get my mind off of. And some of it I think might be because I know that like teenagers and the young adults really struggle with this concept of how do I become who I feel like I am while still trying to stay connected to my family's values or my religious values or my community's expectations? And we talked a little bit about that, I think, in the last episode where we are talking about one of the things that I thought was so interesting about your story is that you could see different places in your book where it was. I kept thinking of the tetherball game. Did you have tetherball where you grew up?
I didn't, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So you've got, you know, this long cord that holds the ball to the pole, but the ball can only go so far away from the pole. And that's how I kept seeing your stories. Like you would try to shoot the ball to a new identity, but then that cord would whip it back to what it was tethered to.
Oh, yeah.
And it's all over in your story. So I'm kind of curious how, first of all, how did you even really know to explore some of those new avenues? And then how did you know it was just finally time to break the cord? Like it was finally time to untether. You have a part of your book that I love that I feel like segues from the life that you had been living as a heterosexual to now this life that you were, you'd cut the cord and now you were heading into the LGBTQ world. And there had to come a point where you did just sever the tether.
Yes. Well, and I think in the book, well, and actually in my life as well, which is what the book is based on, it was a very clear moment. It was July 3rd of 2019. How specific is that?
That's pretty damn.
Right. And that's the day that I had a craniosacral therapy session. And that is where on the table, I could finally admit that I was gay, but also love that piece of me. Like I finally admitted it, but I also finally accepted it. And that is when the cord was cut, because then I adopted it as like, this is a piece of me. I'm not rejecting this part of myself anymore. And I felt whole and I felt this feeling of unconditional self-love for the first time that I could remember. But yeah, there was so much whiplash from the tetherball prior to that.
It's one of the parts of your book, though, I'll be honest, that I love the most.
Oh.
Because whether it's about the coming out journey or, I mean, we've talked about this, it doesn't matter what closet you're coming out of, that whiplash is big.
Yeah.
And it gives you a headache.
It sure does. But the interesting thing, though, now that you say that, is even after I came out in that moment and I said, okay, this is who I am and I love myself, it was an acknowledgement of this is who I am in that my attraction is to women. But I was still not comfortable. I don't remember in that session if I said I was not straight, if I said I was gay. I definitely didn't say I was a lesbian or queer. I couldn't even get those words out of my mouth at that point. And so it was more a knowing of my identity, but the labels around myself, I really struggled with for quite a while after. I think I'm finally at the point in my life where I can stand on the rooftop and be like, lesbian, and be okay with it.
Well, you know, that's so funny because I think of all of the times that we walk out of the closet, whatever it is, I still really struggle to say I'm divorced. That's like that word, that's how I feel about it. I still really, it still sticks in my throat. So, but that's the part of it's way at the beginning. And do you want to read, do you know which section I'm talking about? Do you want to read it or do you want me to read it?
I think so. Are you talking about all the different labels that I use in my story? All right. Stand by, listeners.
I love it from your voice.
Okay. So I said, throughout my story, you'll see I refer to myself interchangeably as gay, lesbian, queer, and LGBTQ+. There are a few reasons. One, I am proud of all the titles, and at the same time, not tightly bound to any single one specifically. I use them sometimes for ease or sentence flow, and other times that is the label that feels most appropriate in that moment. One is no better or worse or more right than another. They all have a purpose. Secondly, the more I say them, the more comfortable I become with them. I couldn't say so many of these words for so long, and lesbian took me the longest to be able to utter comfortably. I'm undoing a lifetime of conditioning to be at peace with all the labels.
You know, what's funny is I did not catch that the first time that I read that, where you said, the more I say them, the more comfortable I become with them.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, like, again, I'm thinking of my son and him calling all of his friends the queers. Mm-hmm. The more that I've struggled with that word, not that I disagree with it, but I grew up in a time when that was like a heavy slang word.
Yeah.
And so now to hear him say it so comfortably, I've really struggled with that word. But the more he says it, the more, like, just the more comfortable I am recognizing that it's like a group of nine of them. Mm. And to think that the phrase that he said was, for the first time in his life, he feels like he completely belongs to a group of people.
Aww.
And he's had really good friends in his life, but this is the first time that all of them identify as, I don't want to use the word misfit, but, and I don't like outcasts. Like, there's not a word. Queer is perfect.
It is. It's just different.
Yeah.
It
gives you the ability, the permission to be able to say, I don't belong here, 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 or here.
Right.
But I do belong.
Yeah. And this is why I have this love-hate relationship with labels, because in some ways I love referring to myself as a lesbian. I love that I can say the word. I love that I can identify other lesbians and find that connection, like that similarity that we have. And at the same time, having appeared heterosexual for the majority of my life, I never had to label myself. It was just kind of assumed for me. So there is, you know, lesbian is like this double-edged sword. It helps me find myself in society. And then at the same time though, too, there are times where I label myself and people are like, well, why do you have to label yourself? Like, why can't you just be? And I'm like, but my label does impact the way that I live my life, and it impacts the way that others see me.
Well, and you and I have talked about the word in the literature, we use locate a lot. Mm-hmm. Can you locate yourself in your group? Can you locate yourself in the story? Can you locate yourself in your community? Wherever it is, our ability to locate ourselves is how we create a sense of safety and belonging within ourselves. Otherwise, that's when we keep those masks up. So I think I appreciate that you're saying that people have said that. Why do you need the label? And on one hand, it would be great if we don't need the label. Mm-hmm. But as long as we've created a society that's based on arguing over polarities, right, wrong, good, bad, all of it, as long as we've created a social environment that tells us who's good enough to be included and who is not good enough to be included, then we always will need labels.
Right. And I think my goal with a lot of the LGBTQ plus labels is just to change the charge of the word. So you said that for your son using the word queer, that that's something that you still struggle to feel comfort with. For me, that word is dyke. I know people who have reclaimed like the group Dykes on Bikes, and there's another podcast that's called Dyking Out. And so I love that there are people who are like, you know what, this is our word and we're going to own it. At the same time, I get this tightness in my chest when I hear that word, because I've only heard it used in a negative way until recently. But that's why too, in the book, I wanted to use all the labels to try and take the charge out of it. There's another section of my book where I was 24 years old, and that was the first time that I can recall of in my life hearing the word lesbian used as something other than a slur or a tease. It was just somebody, a lesbian, identifying herself as a lesbian, and it practically knocked me off my chair because I just hadn't ever heard it used as an adjective. Like, I'm right-handed, I'm left-handed, I'm straight, yeah, I'm gay. It would be great if the labels could just be descriptors and not have the certain punch that comes with them.
So I like that you're saying it would be great if they could be descriptors, because in my mind, what I'm seeing is that a lot of the times that labels are used to either separate us or connect us.
Yeah.
So they're either used to be able to say, this is us, and the label indicates them, some other them over there, or the label is used to be able to say, here's the social norm, and the label allows me to come over here and be with the other. So whether it's that we're using the label so that we belong to a group or that we're disconnected from the group, it still really is kind of used as, what box do you belong in? What closet do you belong in?
Right.
And I love that you're saying, and wouldn't it be great if it was just a descripting word?
Yeah. Well, and it's, my son and I had this conversation recently. He's 10 years old and he's in fourth grade. And there was another kid in his class who was going around calling people gay in the classroom. And so he came home and he said, Mom, is gay a good thing or a bad thing? And I said, you know, again, like I just mentioned before, I said, well, it's not a good or bad thing. It's just a thing. Like, right-handed, left-handed, blonde, brunette. It's, some people are gay, some people are straight. And he said, oh, well, the way the kid was saying it, it made a girl cry. And so it made me think that maybe it wasn't a good thing. And I was like, well, how did you respond, buddy? And he's so awesome. He's like, well, I just told the kid, I don't know if I'm gay, but my mom sure is.
Oh, I love that.
And that kind of entered the conversation there of like, there's no charge to the word for him. So he was just giving the facts of, well, I don't know if I am yet, but my mom is. And that was it. It was just very black and white. And I don't know.
But isn't that so wise for him to have been able to pick up?
Bless the neurodivergent crowd that just tells it like it is.
Well, but he was able to pick up based on the way this kid was using it. It feels like it was an insult. And the other person in my class might have felt that way too, because it made her cry.
Yeah.
So there is such power in the intention of the word. So you just used the example of the word dyke. There's a couple of words, like I'm okay to say the F word, but the P word and the C word, I don't use.
Oh yeah. Same.
Like not at all do they come out of my mouth. And I feel like dyke would be one of those words also. Like that's not going to come out of my mouth.
Right.
But other people may feel like reclaiming that word gives them the ability to start softening around it as well. So it does, it goes to intention kind of, I suppose, with the labels.
Yeah, it does. And I, again, like we talked about this in one of the other episodes. So originally the book was titled A Chronic Case of Hetero, and they said, come up with a different description. And then and Not Straight was one of the titles that we had toyed with. And then I realized that I didn't want the focus to be on the negative, like straight was the goal. And like, oh, I'm not that. Like, let's just let queer be. Like, let it be part of the title and let's just let it be a word. And it can be paired with perfectly, because how often do you see those together?
I love it. I already said that. I feel like you landed on just the perfect title for this book.
Yeah. So, but you know, labels are a struggle, and I still see it even within the LGBTQIA plus community right now. It's a struggle of, well, who is a lesbian? Because, you know, we have words like gay, lesbian, bisexual, pansexual, asexual that all relate to people's sexual attraction. Mm-hmm. And then you have the whole gender spectrum that's also included in the acronym with trans people, agender people, mm-hmm. and non-binary, who are the plus sign at this point, because we've taken almost every letter of the alphabet. So in those situations, it becomes hard because there are non-binary people who identify as lesbian. And so sometimes there's fighting over, well, you can't be a lesbian because you're non-binary. And it's really, it brings up, and I don't know what the easy answer is. I didn't come on here to be like, we're going to settle this, people.
Because, we're going to have a lesson and a quiz.
Right. Because it's not an easy discussion around it. But at the same time, I always go back to, who are we to tell another person what label is most appropriate for them? Like for the non-binary person who says, I feel like my sexual attraction is a lesbian attraction. Who am I to tell them otherwise? But secondly, what does it matter? Like if they identify with that term, what is the actual harm to me in sharing that label if that's what feels most right to them? I don't know. It's just very interesting. It's probably one of the bigger discussion points I've seen happening lately in the women loving women groups online that include a lot of non-binary folks and even trans women who sometimes are getting pushed out by others from the lesbian label. So
yeah, what my brain is kind of thinking, because I know a lot of people who are new, whether they're new to identifying LGBTQ+, or if they are new to even just being an ally of the LGBTQ+ community. Like if you're new, all of the different labels can be really overwhelming. I'm still overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you and I have talked about that quite a bit. And my poor son, I still am asking him questions about the transitioning journey from male to female, female to male. So, but kind of what's coming to my mind right now is that maybe it's not our position as the other to label somebody else.
Yes. So
does that
Thank
make
you.
Sense? Like, I don't have to worry about, well, wait, are you lesbian or are you gay?
Right.
I don't have to do that. I just get to see you as my friend. Mm-hmm. I get to see the person on the street as a person on the street. When it comes into play is when I want to create maybe a more intimate relationship with this person or a more authentic conversation, let's say. So I'm thinking, so I'll be a little bit more, I guess, specific. So I go to the same Starbucks probably 3 times a week. I go to the exact same Starbucks. The people know me. And there are 2 people who specifically are there almost every time that I come. Mm-hmm. One day I said, I just love you gals. And one of the people interrupted and she acknowledged that she identified as a she, but the other identified as they. Mm. And that they both identified as non-binary. But the pronouns for the one was they, the pronouns for the second person, she said she's okay with she or they. The other one is they. But I appreciated it so much because they identified themselves to me.
Mm.
They got to use the label.
Yeah.
And got to tell me which pronouns that they preferred. It wasn't a hostile conversation. It wasn't a corrective conversation. It was, hey, I see you 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
We interact. They leave me notes on my Starbucks. You know,
Aww.
So we've developed enough of a relationship that at that point it was appropriate that they identified their labels and let me know.
Yeah. What they let you in on their story.
Exactly. They let me into the story.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what keeps coming to my mind is it's not any of our position to label anybody it is our responsibility to receive those labels if somebody else has given them to us. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. And I, yes. I'm not going to say anything more on that, because really it is for us to learn how they identify themselves, who they are. Like,
yes.
And it's interesting too that you say that, because one thing I've seen when I post things on social media, especially about coming out at 38 years old as a lesbian and the fact that I was married to a man, I have a lot of people who come back, generally who I think are straight men, but come back and say, "You're not a lesbian, you're bisexual."
And oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah. I am not the only one either. I know there are a lot of other lesbians who've come out later in life, but if they've had a relationship with a man, they are labeled as bisexual by other people. Again, it's not that there's anything wrong with the bisexual label, but I am not that. Bisexual is attracted to men and women. If I were bisexual, I may still be in the marriage that I was in. That romantic sexual attraction to men, even to a man specifically, wasn't there. I am very secure and solid in my lesbian identity. And even still, other people do struggle with it based on my history.
Well, and I think it's, I mean, I don't want to be too judgmental, because to be honest, and I don't think that we are, but it is complicated.
Oh, and sure.
I think of pre-ally Trisha and post-ally Trisha, there was a big journey to get from one to the other. And I have to be really mindful of the fact that there's a lot that I didn't know. And you actually say this at the end of this section that we've been talking about. There's a lot that I didn't know. It's not my excuse, but it's the reality of where I was coming from. But now that I know better, it's my responsibility to do better. And it's all of our responsibility in this area, I believe, to start learning a little bit more about what we don't know. Because like we've talked about for several weeks, at this point, there is no one who will not be intimately connected to someone who identifies LGBTQ. It's not possible. Right.
And I think you also hit the nail on the head of why releasing a memoir that is about my experience as part of the LGBTQ plus community is so challenging. Because even when I wrote the book, which is now over 2 years ago, I think when I initially started writing the chapters, who I was then and what I knew about the community, and even the labels we used 2 years ago, things have changed. You know, it used to be that people would say, like, what are your preferred pronouns? And people, and now we've dropped the preferred. It's not, what do you prefer? What are your pronouns? Who are you as a person? And so even still though, like I always joke that I'm getting my PhD in gay, because I am always trying to study these changes and understand what is the language we use now? What is the most appropriate way to say this? And even us, you know, like with the memoir, with this podcast, everything is at a point in time. And so while we continue to grow and evolve as people, it is scary having these time capsules of my ideas, of your ideas, that people could go back to and say, well, wait a second, you said this.
Oh, I tell you all the time, the fact that I lived in California during Prop 8, like I just want to erase that from my existence. It kills me that I was part of that.
I think, I mean, I know I have my own experiences where I've said things or done things related to the LGBTQ community that I regret. Mm-hmm. I mean, just comments that I made or I don't know. It was my own discomfort around my own identity, a lot of internalized homophobia. And yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. I mean, isn't that part of, like, that's why it's good that we grow and change too.
Well, and I'm kind of thinking, because again, it's so easy for people to get frustrated at it if we're looking at it from the perspective of the LGBTQ community. But this is not the only community that we use labels on.
Correct.
We use labels to identify Christians and non-Christians, Jews and non-Jews. We use labels to identify married and unmarried, single, with children, not children, divorced. Like, we use labels for everything. And like you said, everything is a time capsule based on what we have lived through in the past and now the experiences that we gain that gives us more knowledge. Even suicide is kind of an interesting one to me, because for a long time we used the word, they committed suicide.
Right.
And now we don't use that phrase anymore. The more eloquent way to say that is they died by suicide.
Right.
So I think, like, I kind of just want to point that out, not necessarily that it ties into our conversation here, but I kind of want to cut the tether for people who think that this is only an issue in the LGBTQ world and it's based on some sort of an uprising, the LGBTQ people, like there's no uprising. There's no.
We're so trendy. It's just trendy. I want to commit my life to this person for decades ahead because it's super trendy.
It's super trendy. Oh my gosh, we've got whole things to say on that. So I kind of just want to point that out. This isn't that any one group of people is trying to be obstinate or whatever. It's in our entire society, we use labels to help us identify one another, locate ourselves, and unfortunately to ostracize some.
Yeah. Well, I think we've had a lot of great conversation around this. I think if I could leave our listeners with one thing, it would be to sit and think about what labels do have a charge for you and why. And is it a label that you need to or want to get comfortable with, whether it's describing yourself or how other people describe themselves? And what action can you take to learn more about the history of that word or that label? And
I love that.
Why people use it. I'm huge into studying history to understand. And it is, I mean, geez, Louise, queer LGBTQ history is fascinating. Just looking at the words and terminology is really pretty incredible at how much it's changed just in the past 100 years.
I agree. It is a fascinating history. I learned most of mine from RuPaul, I've told you. RuPaul will make some sort of a comment and I'm like, I need to learn more about that.
Yeah. What the heck? Yep. Shantae, you stay. Okay. So on that note, thank you so much, Trisha. I hope this is a very helpful conversation for people, because I know there's a lot of folks out there who are either struggling with their own labels now or how people in their life are labeling themselves. And yeah, so hopefully this helps.
I agree. All right. Have a great week.
You too.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, US podcast listeners, we want to come to you. If you're interested in having a perfectly queer book event with me, Jillian Abbey, and Dr. Trisha, email us at lifeandloveinthequeue@gmail.com or DM us on our social media accounts and let us know where you're at in the US. We would love to coordinate and connect with you to meet you in person, and we appreciate your support. Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveinthequeue@gmail.com. Until next time, Q Crew.